Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/discordia19. Over 100,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. audibletrial.com/discordia19. Good evening and welcome to the Discordia 19 podcast for March 21st, 2012. This is episode 5. My name is Joe.
And my name is Mondo.
Well, this is a podcast where we talk about Stephen King and Stephen King in the news and Stephen King in our lives, I guess.
Stephen King's inside me. That sounds dirty.
It does. Dirty. So, a couple things happened this week. The main thing I wanted to concentrate on this week, mostly, is that looks like the Dark Tower movies TV show combination is back alive again. We thought it was dead for a while there, but I think it's back. Warner Brothers is saying that they are in talks now with Ron Howard to make the movie.
Opie's going to make the Dark Tower.
Yeah. And I think that's good. I'm excited about it. But I have a couple reservations. And a couple things I'm going to think are going to be awesome. So I figure we'll talk about Dark Tower movie to start.
Sounds good.
So the first thing I think is that The Gunslinger will make it a great movie. It has a narrative. It has a beginning and a firm end. It's interesting. We get the introduction to the life and the past of Roland. I think it's going to make a good beginning.
Sure, and it's short.
Yes, it's relatively short. Because if you think about it, if you compare it to the Harry Potter books, the Gunslinger books are probably longer, especially since the Harry Potter books have giant child-sized type. the Dark Tower world is a longer amount of story, and it took 9 movies to fit them into to tell all of the stories for the Harry Potter movies. So there's a bit of a problem there, I think, that 8 movies, not 9. But I think that it's it's long, and there's a long amount of time that it's spanning, which may be another complication.
Right.
So that's one of the problems I have with it, with the movie. I don't know what they'll do about that. I mean, having it as a TV series in between the movies, I suppose, helps a bit. Because the rumors have all been that it's going to be 3 movies and 2 television series between the 3 movies.
See, I'd like to reverse that personally.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think they should do a Gunslinger movie. And the rest of it should be a television series.
But an HBO style television series.
Exactly. Not like an AMC. Not that I'm not bashing AMC at all, but yeah, like an HBO
Game of Thrones series. That kind of deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now he kills off a lot of people. Throughout the series, he kills off some main characters, and I think that's good. I think that makes for good storytelling. That's a good movie.
Right.
But at the end of the third book, at the end of the second book, beginning of the third book, there is a talking train and a riddling contest.
Blame the Mono.
Right. I'm not sure how that would translate to a movie or a TV show. You know, it says things like, "What you say is true, Roland of Gilead, but the quality of your riddles is not proven." Right? That's a little, I don't know. I don't know. Some people, we being big fans and constant readers, may have an easier time with thinking that that's awesome because we've always wanted to see a real Blaine the Mono. I'm not sure how the general population would think about that.
So you're worried that it's going to come off like maybe corny or something?
Yes.
It's like people are going to be like, wow, this is like some serious shit. We're in the shit here. Mm-hmm. And what the fuck?
All that death going on in Ludd. I mean, Blaine basically killed every human being and there was committing suicide. I don't know how much of that they'll put in a movie, but there was a lot of serious shit going on.
There was.
Meanwhile, there's a giant pink bullet-shaped train trying to play riddles with them.
Yep.
And another problem I'm going to have... first of all, Warner Brothers is also making The Stand, so you think they're going to bother to have continuity with The Stand? The actor playing Randall Flagg, will he be the same actor as in the movies, the Dark Tower movies? Is it necessary? Maybe they just never even mention it.
It's not necessary. I mean, we know, you know, and constant readers know that it's Randall Flagg. They do say that he was, you know, known as Randall Flagg. We know from reading Eyes of the Dragon that it's Randall Flagg.
Yes.
However, he uses other names in the series, and it's like I wouldn't feel cheated at all if they don't mention the fact that his name is Randall Flagg. If they call him Martin or Walter or the Ageless Stranger, and they never mention Randall Flagg,
mm-hmm.
I'd be okay with that.
What about when they end up in the world of The Stand for the beginning and end of Wizard and Glass? Do they just make it? They just don't mention it's The Stand world. They just call it a place where everyone's dead, or maybe us as fans can tell, and maybe they put some kind of subtle Easter eggy kind of hints that it's where it's supposed to be, but they don't really explain it that way too. Like, there's no newspaper that says Captain Trips so that people can't be like, wait, I just saw The Stand on the same movie and it said something. See, I don't know how other people would, regular people would.
You know, I think they could. I think they could still do it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, one of the things about the Dark Tower series is that, I mean, it takes place on multiple Earths.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who's not to say that there can't be, like, more than one Stand Earth?
It's true.
And, you know, the Stand movie is, you know, one Stand Earth. And, you know, and I mean, they could even go ahead and use Randall Flagg, too. I mean, it would be cool if they used the same Randall Flagg.
Mm-hmm.
But who's producing the Stand movie? You may have said, no, I may have glossed.
Ben Affleck.
Right, which studio?
Oh, it's also Warner Brothers, same as Dark Tower.
They could. That would be cool if they pulled that off.
So that also leads me to the thing I think might be the biggest problem, and that is the convoluted explanation that isn't quite so convoluted when you read it. But when you try and explain aloud why Stephen King has to show up in this movie, or I'm not sure how they're going to manage that either. I don't know if, I mean, I know he's involved in, he's one of the producers, he's considered an executive producer of the Dark Towers.
Right.
When they're being made, if they ever get made. And I don't know if that means that he has promised to be in the fourth and fifth books. I'm not sure. How do you do that, and how do you make it not bad?
You know, I'm gonna say that I don't know, I might have figured it out. I mean, not that, I mean, sure, you know, the bringing Stephen King in, yeah, I mean, because it angered a lot of Stephen King fans.
It did. So, I mean, even people that love it may have an issue.
Right. Because, I think that people who aren't big Stephen King fans who are still going to possibly watch, like, you know, The Gunslinger and say, holy shit, this is pretty awesome. You know, I thought he was just a scary clown guy, plug it up guy.
Yeah.
But this is pretty awesome. This is something absolutely different. And I'm really digging it. Yeah. And then they get to, like, you know, the sixth season or the third movie or however they're going to wind up working it out, and he shows up, you know, yeah, it's like, I think they'd be angrier than the Stephen King fans who didn't like that.
Yes. So I think that's a problem. And we'll have to see.
I think Joe Hill, though, should play younger Stephen King, because we see young Stephen King and older Stephen King.
Right.
Joe Hill could easily play his father at the younger age.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Because at first I was like, how are they going to do that? What are they going to, like, CGI him young or something like they were doing in Tron, the Tron movie? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Joe Hill, you know, he's not a dead ringer, but damn close enough.
Yeah, that might work. Even so, for me, who didn't dislike the fact that King wrote himself into the stories, that'd be okay. And the whole idea of him being in it, I understand. But you know, even I read an article that said there is an essential plot point late in the stories that is likely to induce death by eye rolling, and I'm assuming that's what they're talking about. That
it has to be,
yeah. So. Works. The article says the device. This device works in the books, but just might not be cool in the films. I'm not sure.
It might not be. You know what the sad thing is, though? I bet you it would work fine if they made up a different author.
I suppose
like,
so.
Like if they made the author like, you know, Bill Smith.
Just yeah.
People probably be like, "Oh wow, that's awesome."
They should make it some other famous author. They get Peter Straub, a bookcase full of Peter Straub books that they drag through the door. I mean, all that, there is some definite stuff in there that's tough. I don't know how they'll deal with it. I guess it'll be interesting to see. And it makes me afraid they're going to change too much stuff to make it more public friendly. You know, I mean, there's roses in fields that open up to millions of suns and, in the middle of a garbage-filled field where Jake sees faces in the garbage, and that's awesome. And then the end, the way it ended, which, you know, even more people hated than the fact that King wrote himself into the story, might be a huge problem for people. They're going to get to the end of this long 3 or 4 or 5 year journey and see how that it just starts at the beginning again and be really pissed off.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that actually not too long ago, like maybe a couple of months ago, because mm-hmm. I had seen something where someone was like, you know, calling it like, you know, bullshit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really think that a lot of these people like really kind of missed the point. Well, not the point, but I mean, you know, there was a big difference there.
There was.
Because, you know.
Because he made better choices.
Right. And, you know, you definitely see that he's about to break the cycle. I mean, we don't know how many times he's done this.
Right.
But you definitely see that this time.
It's a progression.
Right. And, you know what? I think if it hadn't done that, I think I probably would have been pissed off too.
I agree. But if it was identical and we didn't see a change and he even hinted that, you know, he explained it in the book.
Yeah.
That there was a change and that things were, you know, the fact that he was able to love someone is what made it different this time through.
So, you know, if they play that off.
Mm-hmm. Make it even more so, make it more obvious.
Right. If they make that more obvious that, like, you know, even though, right, he's back at square one, it's like, you know. You know, he's pass and go and he's collecting his $200 this time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think if they make it plain, you know, very clear that there's a, that there's potentially an end, even if we never get to see it, mm-hmm. it's still going to piss people off. But
yeah,
I think if they make that very clear, I think it might not piss as many people off.
What about the fact that he brings Jake and Eddie back to life and sort of Jake, Eddie, and Oi? That's, you know, actually, that's pretty okay. We've been dealing with a lot of TV shows with alternate realities and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And she leaves and goes and finds them before the climax of the story. So that would probably still work. You know, they'll be a little different than they were. And that's pretty easily explainable, I suppose. I hope there's not a lot of voiceovers to explain things. Movies with voiceovers kind of sometimes don't work.
No, they don't. You know, I think, especially in the case of the Dark Tower, I don't think you'd need a lot of voiceovers.
You shouldn't have to explain everything.
You shouldn't. And I think the things in the Dark Tower are cut and dried enough that we wouldn't need voiceovers. And anything that we don't understand, I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about, is like in Doctor Who, I mean, the prime purpose of a companion, aside from looking hot mm-hmm. most of the time, is so that there's someone for the Doctor to explain things to, so that we understand that. So, you know, with the characters being introduced, I mean, yeah, you wouldn't need a voiceover if someone's just like, well, what the fuck is this? Roland can just tell them without the need of a voiceover.
Yeah. Yeah. So all in all, so I don't know. I guess I'm 60-40 about it. I'm really excited, but I have some worries. But I still think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be awesome. I'm probably like 30-70 though.
Yeah.
They're going to fuck it up.
Yeah, you're worried, huh?
I'm very worried they're going to fuck it up because it's. It would be really easy, like I said. I mean, I not easy, you know. I'm no Ron Howard. I've got more hair, but like I said, if you ask me, like the best thing to do would be to do a television series. Sure, open up with a Gunslinger film,
mm-hmm.
and then do it all on HBO.
Slow and steady.
Slow and steady. This way you're not worried about rushing anything. You're not worried about, like, you know, missing over important things, like, you know, that you had to edit out for time.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's exactly what the plan is. Maybe, right? Because the drawing, first Roland's encounter with the Lobstrosities can be an hour long episode. And then Roland making his way across the desert till he finds the first door and dying and hallucinating can be part of that, and then it could end at the door, and then him drawing Eddie can be an episode, and then him drawing Suze, and then him fighting with Jack Morton and all that. You know, I could see how they could split that into episodic TV stuff. Even then, you know, an episode about them training and fighting the bear, and then an episode of them drawing Jake again, right? It could really get episodic pretty easily once you pass the Gunslinger.
Exactly.
And then it'll get to a point where maybe Magus needs to be another movie. Maybe a whole movie about his that whole story in the past.
See, that's something I would like. I wouldn't mind that.
Right. So that's a good chunk of TV in between before Magus. And then it gets a little tougher. There's not so much you can break up. I guess Wolves can be shortened by a lot and turned into episodes, or broken up more than the other one was, you know, more. Because, you know, they did a lot of, you know, walking around and trying to get people to agree. I guess they'll have to cut stuff, you know, getting everybody to trust them and you know, want them to help and stuff.
You know, or they could do it. I still think they should do that, like, as a, as like, episodes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, like, hanging around on, like, a farm for, like, you know, like an entire season not getting much done. a little diss to The Walking Dead there. Not really a diss, but, I mean, you know, it worked all right in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope mean, we have time I to talk about. To gloss over Callahan's story. Father Callahan's story, yeah. I would like that to be an entire episode.
Yeah.
I don't want them to rush through that.
Yeah, I agree. And what do they make? And then, so there's going to be a middle movie. What do you make as the middle movie? Like Susanna. Maybe Susanna. The whole Jake and Suze at the Dixie Pig and Roland and Eddie back in time.
A Song of Susanna would be easier to do a movie of because of the...
It's shortish.
It's short.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, it's like... While it's an important part, you know, a very important part of the series, if you're going to be splitting things up into series and movies, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to do Song of Susanna as a movie.
It's too small, and, I think. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. It's not important enough.
Wolves, to me, has a beginning, middle, and end. And I mean, there's more after the final battle in Wolves. So maybe they seem, yeah. I don't know, maybe Magus stays TV and Wolves becomes a movie, the middle movie.
I think I'd rather see Magus as a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's interesting too, because you get it's a whole different cast, right? Because they're all exactly. young. They're all young people.
So you could be filming that while you're doing
the TV series.
The TV series.
This is all interesting. Very interesting. And then where do you do with the last movie? Do you start? Where do you start that? Do you do the fight at what the hell is the name of the against the Breakers, the freeing of the Breakers, and the fight was that Agus Ciento. Yeah, Agus Ciento. To do that big fight as part of that movie, and then you know go through the snowy place, and then to the tower.
You see, no, it's like Stephen King didn't make these like traditionally movie friendly.
No,
because that's the big part of the book. That's the big okay corral type scene. That's your climactic scene from the movie.
Yeah,
happens. You know, in the beginning of the book. I mean, and the rest of it, I mean, you know, as far as a book goes, I mean, it works out really well. It's like everything else. But your really big scene that, you know, most movie people would put at the end of the movie happens, you know, pretty much at the beginning of the book.
Yep.
And then it's a lot of walking.
And then, you know, yelling at the tower and throwing grenades, basically.
Right. It's like...
and then just erasing the bad guy from existence. It doesn't even have a really huge climactic...
Exactly.
Moment there at the end.
You know what it is? This is exactly what it's like. It's like filming and releasing Return of the King and then following it with Lord of the Rings and just being like, here you go. And it's just like, wow, that was this huge thing. And now everybody's just kind of walking around and they had some thing. And then,
yeah,
you know, there was a fight with a big thing and a sacrifice that took about 5 seconds. And, you know, okay.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I should have probably said spoiler alerts at the beginning of this episode. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, put it in the show notes.
Yeah. So this week's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. For the listeners of the Scorpio 19 podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. We love audiobooks, Mondo and I.
We do.
And Audible is a great way to consume them. Much less money than buying DVDs or CDs, however they come these days. And you can keep them forever in your Audible account. You can use it on any gadget, iPhone, iPad, Android, computers, Kindles, just about anywhere. They have all the Dark Tower books. They have the top five books at the moment. Are The Stand, the three Hunger Games books, and Killshot, which is by Vince Flynn, all unabridged. You can get any one of them you want for free with your 30-day trial. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/discordia19. Again, that's audibletrial.com/discordia19 for your free audiobook. And we thank Audible for their support of Discordia 19.
They're awesome.
The second Dark Tower thing I want to talk about is I got my book.
Your book?
I got The Wind Through the Keyhole.
Doesn't come out. Wind Through the Keyhole? What's that? I thought the series was done.
It is the Dark Tower book 4.5.
I like that.
Right. It comes out. It comes between Wizard and Glass after they leave the Oz, fake Oz, but before they get to the Caliban Sturges. And it was awesome. I loved it so much that I want to read it again, except that the fact that I had to read a signed copy of the book, because the only reason I have it is because I bought the limited edition signed copies of them. Right. And I won't read it again because I already opened the binding too much to read it. It's due out April something or other, the regular version.
You knew I was looking it up, didn't you?
I heard some typing. I thought that must
yeah,
be
yeah, that's exactly what I was doing.
April 23rd? Or maybe I'm just making that number up. But I didn't read this edition that I have that's signed by King. I have the limited edition, which is King, signed by King, and Jay Lee, who did the art for the books, which is, the art is incredible. I was a little worried that a comic book artist was drawing these illustrations. It was a little bit of a departure from the other books.
Right.
But the illustrations are amazingly good.
And yeah, Jay Lee is very good.
He is. It suits the material very much. It was just great.
I see that. Actually, I'm looking at the first edition cover right now.
Yeah.
With the big tiger.
Yeah, the tiger. anyway, it was great. I'm going to put a bigger, a full length, like a written review up at discordia19.com. You can read about it there. I'll review the quality of the books themselves. The, you know, they're great. They're by Grant Books. DM, not all them Grant Books. They're a little expensive, you know, the limited. I don't remember how much I paid. But I didn't read the one time I came, like I was saying. I have the artist edition, which is only signed by Jay Lee. And so I read one of my I bought two artist editions. I read one of those.
Just one?
Yeah. But it was fantastic. The other one I left wrapped in plastic. I did open the limited, but signed by King, to make sure it was signed. I always do that. And then I put it back in a new bag. I put it back in a bag and put it on my shelf.
You know, I think I would do that too, just not even to make sure it was signed, but just to look at it and be like,
yep.
Oh man, he signed it.
Yep, I had to look.
You know, I do that still with the with that American Gods you got me, signed by Neil Gaiman.
Oh yeah?
Every now and then I open it up and I'm like, Neil Gaiman signed it. Yeah, and I haven't read it. I haven't read the 10th edition, the 10th anniversary edition.
I haven't read mine either. I bought it on Kindle just so I didn't want to, so I didn't read the signed version. It's only got, I didn't read it yet, but I think there's only small changes.
Yeah.
So the book was fabulous. It's a story inside a story. It's Roland telling a story of his youth again. Mm-hmm. Where our merry band of travelers are in a situation where they have some time to sit in one place, and when they do that, they always get Roland to tell them stories. And so he told a story about the time after he killed his mother, but before the fall of Gilead. Where his dad had sent him on another mission with another one of his friends who we hadn't really met before. He sent him with, I just read the damn book. the other friend that's mentioned through the Dark Tower books that is not Elaine O'Keefe, but...
Jamie?
Yes, Jamie Dakari sent him with. Yeah, and then within that story, he tells Roland tells someone else a story that his mother had read to him when he was really young, and my favorite parts were the story within the story. Actually, that was a big chunk of the middle of the book. The majority of the book is actually the story within the story. I guess it's similar to the format that Wizard in Glass was, where they sit still and. And he tells them a story in the beginning and the end is back to our friends. And then, but this had an extra layer on the inside. Anyway, it was great. I can't wait for you to have a copy to read. Or a file to read.
Yeah, I may actually, I might do both.
Yeah, I do both when it's Stephen King.
I really like physical books. I mean, I love having a book to read, but at the same time, you know, especially, you know, recently I've been into the Dresden Files and I finished one of those in the middle of the night and had to start the next one. Mm-hmm. You know, I've kind of started appreciating the e-books.
They have their place.
They do. So, and briefly, like, people should check out IndieBound Reader. Look that up. It's an app. You can get it for anything. IndieBound Reader. It lets you buy ebooks from your local brick-and-mortar bookstores. Well, we'll talk about it more on a, maybe not this one, but on one of the, not the show podcasts, because I really do want to talk about it, but not necessarily here.
Right. Not the Show is our general geek podcast. We do that Sunday nights at 8 o'clock at NotTheShow.com. So you wanted to talk about something else. You saw some kind of Carrie remake, you said?
Yeah. We, you know, because we've been talking about Carrie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the musical. Plug it up. that was not a song. But recently, my daughter had her friend over, and they were watching horror movies. None of them very good. I also saw 11-11-11.
Okay.
That was released in the theater. Somebody released that in the theater. I'll just say really briefly, here's my review, piece of shit. Maybe we can talk about this some other time. But 11-11-11, don't waste your time. Unless you like making fun of movies, I did that. But after that, they watched Carrie. This is the 2002 Carrie, the remake.
Starring Angela Bettis and Patricia Clarkson.
That's it. And Sue Snell was the chick from Battlestar Galactica. She was D.
Candace McClure.
Yeah, I like her. But anyway, so I was watching Carrie, you know, and it's like, even if you don't know what you're watching, mm-hmm. you know, the story, you pick it up quick. You're just like, oh, shit, this is Carrie.
Sure.
You know, I really kind of liked it quite a bit.
Really?
One of the things I really liked about it, not that I thought it was a great movie. I still prefer the original 1976 or whatever year that came out, the original Carrie. I still prefer that one.
Okay.
But one of the things I liked about this one is the book was written after the fact. Like after, you know, after Carrie had burned the thing down. And it's just like, you know, it's almost like a crime. It's almost like one of those true crime novels.
Okay.
Where Stephen King did a lot of like things like newspaper articles, and it was like almost like a case study.
Sure.
Into Carrie White.
On the same note, the Broadway show, they did it with, there was like a police invest, there was no cop there, but the friends, including all the ones that lived, were talking to some kind of investigator that was grilling them on what happened.
Okay, right, and that's what they did in the 2002 movie.
Okay, that's kind of
yeah. Yeah, and actually it was David Keith. Or wait, no, Keith David.
Keith David. No, not, David
not
Keith.
Not the black guy that I love David like, immensely, Keith. But...
no, David Keith.
Yeah, okay. the poor man's Patrick Swayze. he played the police guy. And yeah, he's grilling everybody and stuff, and they're answering questions. And I was just like, you know, I was like, hey, I said, this is like, you know, I kind of dig that concept. But then at the end of the movie, spoiler alert for anyone who still hasn't seen the 2002 Carrie, Sue goes to Carrie's house and finds her mother dead, and she finds Carrie drowned herself in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And she pulls her out of the bathtub and brings her back to life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not supposed to happen.
Carrie lives at the end of the movie.
Wow.
And Sue is driving, you know, she tells the cop, like, you know, I didn't see her. I don't know what happened to her after the prom and after everybody died. And he's just like, well, you don't seem to be very broken up. And she's like, you know, it's been a couple of weeks, man. You know, life goes on.
Sure.
And then you see her, like, you know, she pulls Carrie out of the bathtub, gives her mouth to mouth, and which was hot. and she drives her to Florida.
Wow.
And I was like, what the fuck? And at first I was kind of irritated that, like, you know, once again, like, you know, people got to... Because Stephen King, man, he's not afraid to give you a downbeat ending.
No, he's not.
You know, that's his first novel. He gave you a downbeat ending. Cujo, one of his early novels, downbeat ending. The kid lives in the movie. The kid does not live in the book.
Right, yeah. Everyone, she and her mother both die in the book.
Yeah, everyone's dead.
Yeah.
But so I was kind of disappointed that Carrie lived, and I was like, why did they have to, like, go and give it a happy ending? You know, because it's not really going to be a happy ending. I'm thinking to myself, this girl's tortured for the rest of her life. Like, you would have been better off leaving her dead. But I found out after that, though, that they were trying to do a series. The 2002 Carrie remake TV movie
mm-hmm.
was supposed to be a pilot.
Yep. And it says that they let her survive in the hopes of a Carrie TV series, which never got off the ground.
Yeah. What would you do with a Carrie TV series?
I don't know what you would do.
It's like every week she goes someplace else. People make fun of her and she burns the place down. This week on Carrie, she gets a job at the convenience store. And then someone dumps pig blood on her. She burns the convenience store down. And Sue Snell drives her to Louisiana. You know, it's like, what the hell? But I don't know. That might have been an interesting series. You know, other things that they did series, like a Stephen King series of that I didn't think I would like. And I really did was that Dead Zone series.
Yeah, yeah. That was good.
Yeah, I dug that. I mean, it wasn't awesome,
mm-hmm.
but it was good.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely good. Did Tommy die in the original version? Tommy must have died in the original version.
Yep. Tommy died. Yep.
Okay. I don't know why they mention it here. Does Tommy die in this version? Why would they save him for some reason?
Yeah, I don't know why they would save him. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, Tommy in the original 76 movie, that was John Travolta, right?
Yes.
We'll drop big blood on her, right? It'd be funny. And, you know, I mean, he was just like, he was a douche in the, you know, he was a douche in the book, but he was like kind of like really dark.
Mm-hmm.
Travolta didn't play him dark. Travolta played him like some guy who'd do anything to get laid.
Yeah.
And he was just like a big bully.
Yeah, that's how they played him in the play, too. They made it that the girl was pushing him more than anything else to do it for her.
Yeah, in the 2002 carry, he was like really he was dark.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't have been surprised. Like if Michael Bay made this movie, like Tommy would have had powers too, and him and Carrie would have like duped it out with a lot of noise. He was just dark.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I'll have to see it at some point.
I think it's on the Netflix. I think that's what they were watching it on was the Netflix.
All right, yeah. I will watch it. It was filmed in 2002 in Vancouver. Isn't everything filmed in Vancouver now? They're shooting something down the block from my house.
Your house in Vancouver?
No, my house here.
Any idea what they're shooting?
I have no idea. I guess if I went over there and tried to figure it out, I probably could, but they're filming in historic Richmond Town, but they built a couple modern houses. They built whole houses in historic Richmond Town that they're using for the filming. So I'm not sure what's going on in there, but I'm sure I can look it up.
Hey, you know what else you should check out on Netflix?
Hmm?
Cropsey. It's a documentary about the evilness of Staten Island.
No.
Yeah.
Evil.
Well, there's evil, you know, there's evil spirits and people and monsters living on Staten Island.
Really?
Yeah. Cropsey was something I had heard about when I was a Boy Scout. Like, you know, Cropsey scared the shit out of us. He's the guy with the hook hand and carries a lantern.
Okay.
You know, in Boy Scout camp, like, because we used to camp on Staten Island at Camp Pouch.
Yes.
And, like, you know, any Boy Scouts don't have much of imagination or something because any, you know, any campfire story guy, like if you combine them all into one person, like you basically got Cropsey because he had a lantern, he had a hook hand, and he carried an axe. And one time when I was at scout camp, I questioned how he'd carry all these things. I just got a dirty look because it just really seemed to me like his hands were full. I wouldn't be able to chase scouts around. But I saw a documentary about, you know, satanic cults and mental institutions and, you know, tunnels and stuff on Staten Island, and they were investigating Cropsey, but really they were investigating some guy who abducted a bunch of people in the 80s. But
okay,
it was spooky. So there's a spooky thing on the Netflix called Cropsey.
All right, I'll have to look. That is cool. Also, Walking Dead finished this week. We don't have a lot of time left, but briefly, I felt like if they would have killed Shane at the end of last season, we would be in this entire season could have not existed, and we would have been in the exact same spot. If the entire farm stuff never happened from beginning to end, and they actually had killed off Shane when they did it in the book, they could have panned out. We could have saw the prison, and what's her name could have showed up with her katana, and it would have been the same.
Well, I mean, we did have the farm in the comic as well.
I know. I know. I liked some of the episodes this season, but I didn't like enough that I could say you could have just eliminated the whole season if they wanted.
I can see where you're coming from.
Some people are dead that wouldn't be dead, I suppose. And, you know, there'd be some holes in the story. But, I don't know. I did like the finale. I think Laurie is insane.
Yeah, what the fuck, Laurie?
I think she was very schizophrenic this episode. You know, two episodes ago, she was saying she had to take care of Shane. He better take care of Shane and do something about him. And now she was upset when he admitted that he took care of him.
Yeah.
And he didn't just take care of him. He took care of him only because he was trying to take care of... Only because Shane was trying to take care of Rick. Or kill
exactly.
Rick.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. Maybe
I can see if Shane were just like a lovesick psychopath who wasn't trying to kill Rick and wasn't like really a danger to himself and others, I could see where like Laurie might be upset and be like, dude, I did not fucking mean stab him in the heart. I meant like slap him around a little.
Yeah.
But no, it was obvious that Shane was really dangerous. And he went so far as to say, Shane took me out into the fucking woods to fucking kill me.
Yep.
And I talked to him and I realized there was no way out. So I fucking shanked my best friend. And everybody's like, you're a monster. What the fuck, man?
Yeah, they all seem pretty horrified. I mean, the kid seemed really crushed about it, but that was fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and what, you know, it's like, this is like already old news, and I've seen like a million other things, like, you know, making fun of it and people talking about it. But like, why the fuck doesn't the kid stay in the house ever?
Yeah.
Stay in the fucking house, Carl.
Yeah.
He definitely Carl and Laurie should. Both need to die, like, the season opener, season three. I'm sick of Carl not being in the house, and Laurie, she's dead to me now. Lori needs to die. But holy fuck, zombies.
Yeah, there were a lot of zombies this week.
Yeah, that was like, that was awesome.
Yeah. We'll see where it goes next season. we know they cast somebody for the governor, who I'm not sure who the governor is, if it's an actual governor, or if he's just a cool character called the governor.
He's just a cool character called the governor. He felt that calling himself the president was a bit much.
So on another podcast that I listened to, they were guessing about how they were going to do the governor storyline and the prison storyline. Since I haven't read it, I don't know what any of that means, but they said maybe they're going to find the governor at the prison, and that's how they're going to bring those two things together.
Yeah, that's. I was kind of getting that impression. I don't know why I was getting that impression, but I was kind of getting that impression myself.
Yeah.
Maybe just because, I mean, that's. They seem to want to do things in, like, you know, these story arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would be easier to do. Well, actually, next season, I heard, is going to be
a couple 16 episodes. Yeah.
So actually, I mean, I suppose they could split things up a little bit and not have the governor be in the prison. But, you know, if they were doing a shorter season, it definitely would make things easier to bring those two things together.
Yeah. Anyway, it's over, and I'm happy I have one less show to watch. And it did end well.
You only have one less show to watch for a couple weeks, Joe.
I know. Fringe is back Friday.
Fringe is back. Game of Thrones is coming soon.
Oh, boy.
Winter is coming, Joe.
Winter is coming.
It's 80 fucking degrees out in March, and winter is coming.
All right, that's the end of the show for this week. I hope everyone enjoyed. We post one of these every couple weeks, and you can find everything on Discordian19.com. I blog there. Mondo may blog there soon. I finally sent him his information on how to do that.
Oh, sweet.
And tune in every other week, and we will have more on Stephen King soon. Have a good night.
Good night. To the sacred place. This ain't a dream, I can't escape. Smolders some fangs, but are picking up bones. Spirits moaning among the tombstones. And at night when the moon is bright, someone cries something ain't right. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. To live my life again. I don't wanna be buried in a bed cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. Victor is grinning, flesh is riding away. Skeleton dance, I curse these days. And at night when the wolves cry out, listen close and you can hear me shout. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. Oh no. Oh no. I don't want to live my life.